Join pilot and adventurer Fernando Pino as he takes you on journeys to discover exciting destinations across the UK and Europe. You'll fly with him to hidden gems and experience local culture, from bustling streets to serene hideaways and the best places to eat, sleep, and play. Travel Plans with Fernando Pino is more than a podcast. It's your ticket to exploring the world and its history with a friend who navigates both the skies and the vibrant streets below. Have you ever wondered what a day inside one of the world's most unique brutalist buildings would be like? In this episode, we're flying to London to explore the once controversial Barbican, now a haven for music concerts, film, theatre, art, and architecture. And, dare I say, breeding. More about that later.
Indeed. Welcome on board for another episode of Travel Plans with me, Fernando Pino. Please strap yourselves in, because today we are taking a wild ride through one of London's most peculiar, fascinating, and for a lot of people a bit confusing architectural wonder, the Barbican.
I lived in Tossel.
Did you like living in the city?
Loved it.
What do you feel about what's happened to the city? Are you sad about all the new building that's...
I don't like that.
Yeah, what
happened?
What is that? Is that...
That's a new Barbican.
Oh,
it's
yes,
rather
it's...
inhuman, kind of. I remember it was taken very seriously when it first went up after the war. It's the beginning of the rot. I don't think it'll go on.
It did go on, and it became a huge success and the home of one of the best art centers in the world. It's a fascinating city within a city. And although more than 30 million people visit London each year, most don't even know about the Barbican. In this episode, we are going to spend a great day right at the home of the London Symphony Orchestra, the Royal Shakespeare Company, a top drama and music school, art galleries, cinema complex, tropical gardens, and a unique public library, and end the visit watching the last performance of one of the most successful theatre shows of the last few years. This will be an unforgettable day out that you can easily replicate with your friends and family. I'll talk to you again before we reach our destination, but for now, sit back, relax, and enjoy this podcast. November 22 at Bravo and Alpha and ready for departure.
November 2 with Delta Bravo, I've got no known traffic to affect, departure runway 24 left, surface wind 2903 knots.
Going off on runway 24 left, November 262 Delta Bravo. Welcome back, we are now cruising at 3,000 feet and soon we will start our descent to London Biggin Hill. But first, let's get the big question out of the way. What on earth is the Barbican? Imagine this, a giant fortress of concrete rising from the ashes of the World War II bombing right in the heart of London. It's like a retro-futuristic alien mothership plunked down in the middle of the city, with influences from postmodernism, brutalism, or even from Egypt. Some people love it and swear it's a masterpiece. Others think it's the ugliest thing ever. Love it or hate it, you have to admit the Barbican is unforgettable. Personally, I love it and I frequently spend the whole day there with my family. There's so much to do and enjoy. The history of the Barbican is fascinating, so for this flight I have prepared some in-flight entertainment. Please enjoy it while you sip on a cocktail. I'll be back in preparation for landing.
The Barbican.
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 It's a massive complex.
The Barbican.
The Barbican.
Barbican.
The Barbican.
On the night of the 29th of December 1940, the city of London suffered one of the worst bombing raids of the war. In that one night, nearly 60 acres of residential, commercial and financial buildings in the Barbican area between Aldersgate and Moorgate were either completely flattened or destroyed by fire.
They left us with a devastated area of some 40 acres, which we called by its old name, Barbican.
You'll be able to tell me why this is called the Barbican.
Barbican because there used to be a Roman fort here. And the word Barbican means one of the outer posts of a fortress.
Right.
And so we cleaned the desolation's face, but for long years put nothing in its place.
And then the arguments began.
It's always been a commercial area, and probably the most valuable bit of ground in Britain. Why change its function now and lose a packet?
So here, amid elegant walkways and tower blocks, it was thought, was an opportunity to give some of those commuters a chance of living near their work.
New Barbican's a city on its own that is not built for business alone. Here, like the farmer, you may win your bread. Take lunch and tea and dine and go to bed. Your home is here. Forget the brolly, park the bowler hat. Here is the office, there the comfy flat. Here is a library and shops and schools and quiet walks, green trees and lily pools. Here you may love and marry and indeed, if you will pardon the expression, breed.
It sounded fine. But we only had 40 acres to play with, remember, and the residential population had to be of sufficient size, round about 7,000. The list of amenities went on growing as long as your arm. An arts centre, a student's hostel, a library, new buildings for the Guildhall Schools of Music and Drama, new buildings for the City of London School for Girls. To most people, the site must have presented a bewildering muddle.
You're not lost, are you? Like everyone else here?
No.
An ambitious and expensive 25-acre complex has risen from the urban desert less than a mile from St. Paul's Cathedral.
The Barbican is what the engineers and planners like to call completely pedestrianised. An area where you don't have to dodge traffic, where they put the motor car in its place.
You drive in on the low level, park in your own particular spot. And there's the lift waiting to take you up to your flat.
It's easy to get home when you're one of the relatively few city workers who don't have to commute.
I live in the Barbican and I work in the city, so for me it's very convenient indeed. I walk to work and I can come home for lunch if I feel like it.
Fancy seeing him.
And now cast an eye over this rather peculiar advertisement that's just appeared in London's underground stations. It's designed to underline the fact that the new Barbican Arts Centre, which the Queen opens on Wednesday, is rather tucked away in the City of London, on a part of the map which to most theatre and concert goers is usually marked Here Be Dragon.
Hello and good evening to you from the heart of the City of London, from the new Barbican Centre.
After 25 years of planning and construction, the new Barbican now embraces, around its concrete lake, not only the City of London School for Girls, the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, and residential flats, but an impressive centre for arts and conferences.
Now, can you explain to us exactly what the centre contains in this model?
Yes, indeed. The whole centre is set on an artificial lake, with a vast terrace in the front. And you have your concert hall here with the art gallery and the conference centre above, the Royal Shakespeare here, you can just see the fly tower, surrounded by a huge conservatory, and then the Guildhall School of Music and Drama with its theatres and rehearsal rooms and concert facilities right there.
Over 28,000 working drawings have had to be made for the art centre alone.
Well, the first thing is that one of the architect's jobs is to have a broad back and be beaten. I mean, it's one of his principal jobs. But I quite accept the fact that people do not respond well to modern architecture on the hill because very often it has a sort of spare austerity about it.
How on earth do I find the Barbican Centre? I've been driving around for hours and hours and hours.
I'm getting lost in the Barbican.
It's not a slogan.
Has it rather backfired? Because it's true, isn't it?
Well, some people get lost in the Barbican, yes, but of course my pat reply to that is that if you came here often enough, you wouldn't.
That, I'm afraid, is all we have time for this week, but in 2 weeks' time, our next programme will be on the subject of opera.
From the City of London, we wish you good night.
Hopefully we won't get lost today. I hope you enjoyed our entertainment. You can watch the full 20-minute version on our website and newsletter. The link is in this episode's description. We are now preparing for landing and I can't wait to be back in one of the most important places of my life. It feels like going back home. I will explain it a bit later in this episode.
2 Delta Bravo, settle to wind calm, runway 21, clear to land.
Good to land, runway 21, from to zoo, 26 Delta Bravo.
500.
2 Delta Bravo, backtrack from there, vacate first left through Delta 3 for the main apron park to the Marshall.
Backtracking, vacate first left, over 2 Delta Bravo.
And here we are. It's the first time I land at London Biggin-Hill Airport, and I must say, I got a really good service from the air traffic control.
If I needed to go to London from here, yeah, what's the best, quickest option?
We could either get you a taxi to Bromley South Station.
Okay.
We'll call you one. I think it's usually like £20-25.
Very good.
And then you can get a train 15 minutes into central London.
Okay.
Or you can get a bus from across the road to Bromley South Station as well.
And the train is 15 minutes, you said?
15 minutes on the fast, yeah, but you need to make sure you get the right one.
Very good. Thank you very much for your help. Thank you. Next time I'll take the helicopter. How much is the helicopter?
£3,000.
Me from the future here. I want to clarify what I meant by the helicopter. If you can afford it, there is a service available at Biggin-Hill that takes you to central London in just 6 minutes. It costs around £3,000 per passenger. So this time I'm going to say no thanks.
Good morning. Do I have a ticket to London?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your help. Thank you. Thank you. Bye. So I took a taxi from Biggin-Hill Airport to Bromley South and I am now waiting for the train to London. I'd say this was fairly easy. From Biggin-Hill Airport to central London, it took me around 50 minutes, which is quite good, especially when I am so close now to the Barbican Centre. From where I stand, I can see St. Paul's, and behind St. Paul's, the Barbican Centre. I'm arriving at the Barbican now, and the feeling I get is that I've returned home. Back in 2007, I left my home country of Portugal to study at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. It's one of the top drama and music schools in the world. And one of the many reasons is because it's part of the Barbican. I spent 3 years here studying and working. And in between lessons, I would work at the school's cafe or at the box office. When I arrived here over 15 years ago, little did I know, I would produce my very first show at the Barbican Center, starring my friends, actors Lily James and Freddie Fox. It was a very small production, but one that set up our careers. And if you subscribe to my newsletter, you can see some photos of that production. So it always feels great to be back here. I have so many great memories. It does feel like home.
Still to come in this episode, Fernando finds out that the book he borrowed from the Barbican Library 17 years ago is still at home.
The Barbican embodies the brutalist architectural movement, a style born after the war, known for its boldness and exposed materials. Love it or hate it, its functional audacity demands your attention. To find out more about it, we are going to take a tour with an expert.
Keep close. I lost four people earlier this week. They could still be walking around. So, there's brutalism, but the proper term is the new brutalism, and it comes in this country in the 1950s, and it's promoted by a group of architects who are responding to what they see as a softening of modernism. So modernism dominates the 20th century, form follows function, it was never true. As I say, rectangles in space, that's more accurate. Rectangle, 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 rectangle. People are bored with rectangles by the post-war years, and it starts to soften, detail, whimsy. It all starts in Scandinavia. Scandinavia is very important after all. And they're led by... So this is the best time to tell you that the place wasn't supposed to be dirty, sludgy, grey concrete. The whole place is supposed to be white. So the low blocks were going to be covered in very expensive white marble tiles. You're about to see them. And some people compare this to the underlevel at the Colosseum in Rome. And there is some truth in this. You now know wherever they went, if they saw something they liked, it influenced their further project. Oh, no wind here. And this is what it's all about. It's all about the view. These are viewing galleries. They'll get you from A to B, but that's not their principal purpose. You're supposed to walk around in your spare time and stop and look at the view, and they even slope this for you so it's more comfortable to lean on and you look at the view. And after 80 minutes...
We spent 90 minutes with a very passionate tour guide resident of the Barbican. These tours are the best way to learn the most important and fascinating facts about the estate. You can get tickets for this tour directly from the Barbican's website. The link is in this episode's description.
Exploring the Barbican is delightfully disorienting. Hidden gardens, artificial lakes, unexpected staircases, a network of high walks that almost could rival London's tube network. And panoramic views, lots of raised platforms. And here we are inside the Barbican Centre. Just like the outside, the interior of the Barbican Centre is a fine example of brutalism architecture. Tons of exposed raw concrete form the walls of the space. The surfaces are often textured, sometimes showing the grain of the wooden molds used during construction. Contrasting the coldness of the concrete, you'll find touches of warm wood, bricks, and pops of color in carpets and furnishings. Despite its imposing appearance, the Barbican has surprising moments of openness. skylights and strategically placed windows bring in natural light, creating a dynamic interplay of light and shadow. Like the maze of the elevated walkways outside, the interior feels like an interconnected maze with different levels, unexpected turns, and hidden spaces. This sense of exploration adds a touch of excitement. And that excitement couldn't be more real when you realize what's on offer here. The Barbican Center isn't just a performance venue. It's a thrilling cultural hub and home to the London Symphony Orchestra Concert Hall, two theaters, three cinema screens, two art galleries, and even a tropical conservatory. It has something to spark anyone's interests. And beyond these highlights lies a network of cafes, bars, restaurants, and public spaces that breathe life into the complex. As a student, I loved spending time here, soaking up this unique atmosphere. The Barbican's blend of quiet corners and lively social areas create a space where you can focus on work, lose yourself in a book, or connect with a friend. The Barbican Library is at the heart of the Barbican Center, offering a treasure trove of books, spoken word recordings, DVDs, CDs, and scores for all visitors to borrow. This is not your average library. Here you can even borrow music scores and play them at the pianos available. You can also choose a record and play it on the turntables and CD players. Upstairs, there is a dedicated area for children with tons of books and music records. The whole place feels like an oasis in the middle of a concrete jungle. Now, they might be upset with me though. As a student at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama just next door, I used to come here and take many books. But only recently, I realized that there is a particular one that I accidentally never returned. So here I am, 15 years later, returning the book. Wish me luck. Hello. I'm double embarrassed. I came here today because I found in my archive boxes a book that I took from the library 15 years ago.
Okay.
I was a student at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. And I said, okay, I'm going to the Barbican today and I'll take the book. And you know what? I didn't bring the book. I just opened my bag very happily to take the book to give it to you, and I didn't bring it.
It was 15 years ago.
Okay.
It's
a Noel Coward book. I can't remember which play was, but I can give you my details if that helps. I do not. I have my name.
You may not be on our system anymore.
Okay.
If you've got some identification, I can look at
the Oh, sorry. What I was going to ask you today is, what can I do? I will send it by post, but... Oh, I just feel terribly bad, you know. Now, the address is not correct anymore, but I used to live in London. I'm not in London anymore. I'm not there.
So, I wouldn't worry. If it's been a few years, your details were sold off the system.
I'm so sorry. I've never done something like that in my life.
I realized later that I hadn't kept the book for 15 years, but for 17. Since my visit, I have posted the book back to the library together with the donation.
So this is it. All is forgiven for someone that spent 15 years keeping a book that wasn't mine.
You want me to take a photo of you guys?
Oh, yes, please. Thank you so much.
It's okay.
We're trying to get the whole thing in my
car. I'll try. Just check if it's any good.
Thank you. It's great, thank you.
Today is quite a special day here at the Barbican. The multi-award winning stage adaptation of the movie My Neighbor Totoro closes today after two seasons of sell-out presentations. And because I have tickets for tonight's performance, we are going to end our visit in the best possible way. Now, I am not allowed to take you inside the auditorium, but I'll do my best to show you how much audiences of all ages love this production.
Hello, this is very, very, very important. Please do not take photos of Totoro and his friends. They live in a magical world. Let your friends discover it for themselves. Thank you. Yoroshiku
ask you what you think about the show.
I thought the show was really, really good. It was really wholesome, and I think we were very like giddy at the end, just whenever every single show just came on.
Did you share a tear?
A little bit, yes. Yeah.
Will you miss it?
I think so, yeah.
What about you? What do you think?
I'm just so glad I got to experience it, because genuinely it was amazing and it was so well performed, and it just looked amazing and beautiful. Honestly, it was brilliant.
I'm a big believer that the best moments in life are the ones that fill us with warmth, even years later. The ones that make you wish you could turn back the clock. We should always be chasing that feeling, searching out those special places and experiences. And the Barbican is absolutely one of those places. This whole complex rose from the ashes of the World War II. It's a place literally built on a painful past and transformed into a celebration of art and culture. Today, it's home to some of the absolute finest art, music and theatre that this country has to offer. If that's not worth a trip to London, I don't know what is. Honestly, what a place. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if so, please share it with a friend. If you want to see photos of this trip and a list of suggestions of places to eat, visit and sleep, you can subscribe to my newsletter at fernando.today/travel plans. You can find the link in this episode's notes. See you next time for another flight to an incredible destination. And we are going to the beach.
The 2 Delta Bravo with a left turn at 2 miles, runway 21, surface in 190 degrees, 6 knots, clear for takeoff.
Turn left in 2 miles, clear takeoff runway 21, November 262, Delta Bravo.